Oh my gosh, welcome to Meltdown Comics in the Nerd Melt Theater. It is my pleasure to announce that Harmontown is once again in session. Please welcome to the stage the mayor of Harmontown, my dear friend, Mr. Dan Harmon.
On the right.
Close enough.
I came up a different way.
Yeah.
For those of you at home. I went to a party tonight, so I'm a little drunk. Stop it. Don't encourage it. You're 20, I'm 40. It's not charismatic for me.
It's inspirational for us, though.
Well, keep hitching your wagon to that star, my friend. I will be 60. I'll be under a bridge. You'll be 40. You'll have your own podcast. It'll make you nothing. And we'll just keep it's just conveyor belt into a meat grinder, like in the Pink Floyd The Wall animation.
Now, I saw you, Dan, right before you left to this party, and you were saying, Jeff, we were at a bar, and Dan said, I'm not good with strangers. And
right.
You were worried about meeting your neighbor, and he Google mapped where the party was, and he found out that the house was the house right behind his backyard.
Right.
So how did it go?
Yeah, neighborly. It was, but there was a point at the party where I found out that. This lady who was hosting the party, we were talking about wine and patios and cats, dogs.
I'm gonna guess she was white.
That's on you, my friend, but you are correct.
Just a guess.
She let it drop, and not in the way that you're used to it getting dropped. It got dropped that she had survived a tremendous brain tumor. I'm too drunk to recall like how organically it got scooted in. Like she wasn't like, hey, that's my calling card. Like she was one of those. She was cool with it. She had survived it. It was part of her life, absolutely. So it accidentally arrived in the conversation, and nothing could be more fascinating than you to me. You find that out. Holy shit! Tell me more. How does that start? What does it feel like? What's going on? So I'm talking to a person who has had, she got out her iPhone, she had iPhone photos of a golf ball sized meatball that was in her head, center of it, like a cartoon, like a profile of her skull, and then from the top and then from the side, it's like you could see it right in the middle of her fucking brain, just a golf ball sized, what are you writing down?
Today's date. Dan.
Am I boring you?
No.
This woman.
I had a couple drinks. I was at Greg Proops' comedy special at Musso and Frank's, and there was gin to be had. And I'm happy to say
there were tumor stories to be had at this party, and I
wrote down today's day. I wrote down 7/13/13 ? Is that right?
No.
14?
Yeah.
Okay. Fuck all you people.
It's getting there. Anyways,
okay, 14, and I'm crossing out the question mark.
The only reason I wanted to tell this story is because of this curious social phenomenon. I'm standing on a patio. The hostess has revealed. I'm headlong into, you know, kind of deposing her about her the experience, because this is something that I unbelievable. This happened to you. You survived it. Tell me more. How did you find out? Blah blah blah. There was another guy there, another neighbor. I hope he doesn't start listening to the podcast tonight. And this isn't on him, this is on me. But it was like halfway through me kind of like getting more information from her about this meatball that was in her head that she had survived, this god struck lightning bolt. She's walking around, she's hanging out, she's eating cheese with us, but at one point, Zeus had tried as hard as he could. The guy goes, he said, I think this is verbatim, he said, it's just like my wife. And I was like, okay, all right, swivel over to him.
Slippery slope.
Then he started talking about how his wife had been in a car accident. And he started describing the absolutely brutal details of this car accident that involved also her children were in the car. There's no question that he had total... Yes, it's great. All I could think the entire time was, go fuck yourself. Fuck you, party guy with your wife accident. Talking to the tumor lady. That's my only point, is that I just found myself, like, this has nothing to do with good people, bad people, anything. It's just like the weirdest human phenomenon. I've got a glass of Chablis. I'm talking to this lady. She's like, yeah, survive this thing. It was growing. And then they MRI'd. And then they radioactivated. Well, it was my wife. It was, oh, their babies were bleeding. And it was bacon on the highway. And all of a sudden, there's a good guy and a bad guy in the story. I'm just like, fuck this guy. Fuck this guy. I can't wait to go to the bathroom and talk shit about him. What a piece of shit. His fucking wife in a car accident. Fucking cocksucker. I just think that's a funny human phenomenon. Like, I'm sure he's not lying. But I knew he was a bad person.
Now, I went to a charity thing a couple years ago, and it was for children that had...
Oh, fuck you, Jeff. I'm talking about the tumor lady of the... See what he's trying to do?
No. I was at a thing for a charity for children that had been burned. And I was sitting at a table. There were firemen there, and they have a lot invested in that, because they are people that, you know, are involved in the accidents that happen when people get burned. And so it's a very emotional thing. And there was a woman there I talked to, and she goes, fuck this. I fucking hate this fucking charity. She was so bummed out
fucking
about it.
Fucking burnt people.
No, because she told me, I was like, why? Like, what's your stakes in this? And she's like, I have a child that was born with an illness that, from birth. Like, she never had a chance. Like, these children had a chance
to not get burnt.
Yes. And I was like,
interesting.
Yeah, I was like, look, lady, like,
I thought she was gonna say, like,
no, no. Like, she was saying, like, this is a bullshit charity. These are. I was like, I can't root for anything anymore, forever.
See, that's very interesting, yeah. Though. It's like, where do you, if you, do you, you ever walk down the sidewalk, you're going to the grocery store, it's 3 a.m, you're, all right, midnight, whatever you fucking, you're going to get pencil supplies, whatever. Me, I'm going to get a bottle opener. You hear a little, meow. You look, and there's a little raggedy, little dirt-covered MacGuffin, like a little... meow,
meow. Inside the drugstore?
No, just another, like, one of a million stray cats, like, just, like a, meow, 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 meow. Like, you know it's gonna die if you don't, or maybe it won't, or it'll end up in a shelter, like... Then you pull back in your head and you imagine a map of Los Angeles, and you go, okay, what if every stray cat in Los Angeles was a little red dot? The map of Los Angeles, as far as you could pull back, would be a giant red dot. There is just it's just a condition. It's just misery, feline misery. So you think that about the human condition too, and it's like, it is so weird. You go to a camp for kids who have been burnt. How can you not be on the side of that?
When your life has been affected by something
other than that. Yeah. And it's not, it's like, there are no heroes or villains. It's crazy. Like, what fucking charity do you give to? If you found $1 billion under a rock tomorrow, you know, there's just a uncharismatic sort of fire that keeps raging where you squirt your little fire hose at it. That's called poverty, hunger. It's the thought that counts, me. And then there's the charismatic tragedies with the human faces on them. I don't know.
What is the most charismatic tragedy? I mean, let's rank tragedies in terms of charisma.
Well, it's antigeria. It's the opposite of progeria. It's old people. They slowly become so adorable and that they die. They
get sucked up back inside a uterus.
Yeah, and it's like, fuck you guys. But it's very tragic, but you can't tell from looking at it. Yeah. I want to bring a friend to the stage because he's got a hard in and a hard out, and he's
got a hard in and a hard out.
Yeah, he's dropping in by parachute, and then he's rolling out like on a with a bayonet. I don't do good interviews, and I don't do good introductions. Let's just bring him up. James Urbaniak is here tonight.
Hard in.
Welcome to my poorly formatted show. I'm sorry.
Thank you so much.
I listened to yours today. I listened to episode 11 of your podcast. Getting it on with James Urbaniak?
That's a very different...
It's called Hard Ins and Hard Outs with James Urbaniak.
Your most recent episode is Lockdown. And it's yes. it's great. Like I there's lots of podcasts out there that like Super Ego comes to mind. It's just an experience. Like
yes,
there are people
ego.
Like me who are just dumping their dumb narcissistic asses into a microphone and like pumping it out there, and that's great too. That's worthy of something.
There's a technique to your neurotic spluttering.
Somehow bird children are being helped right now by me doing this. But then there is the actual use of the medium, which is so charismatic and so envy-inducing. When I listen to... I listen to that thing, and it's fucking fast and tight and amazing and purely driven by your resonant tones. You're Dr. Venture from Venture Brothers. You are a professional voice actor. You know what's for sale when you're talking to a microphone, and I'm just...
Thank you, Dan.
Yeah. And this thing, there's 11 episodes of it. Please click on them and listen. It's a fictional podcast. You're telling little stories in every episode.
Yeah, it's just like little short plays, but the idea is that it's James Urbaniak's podcast, but each month James Urbaniak could be a different character. And the given circumstances of his life are completely different. And so it's basically me, like, talking about stuff, but, like, sometimes I'm sort of myself, but, like, in the one you just listened to, I'm the captain of a spaceship.
Yeah.
And then, like, there's one where I'm a drunken college professor who just got fired. There's another one where I'm a guy who just experienced a personal tragedy, just tying it together with the theme of this show.
Yeah.
And that one gets, like, really dark. And so, like, but it started out just because I wanted to just make something, in my house that was easy to, I mean relatively easy to make, and just put it out there.
That's
and then I asked a bunch of writer friends to write for it, and then I've been writing with my writing partner Bree Williams, and we've written like three of them so far, including the space one.
That's pretty great. Easy to subscribe to,
and it's on the Feral Audio.com with the Harmontown.
Yeah.
It's part of the Feral family, of stars.
You know, there's a lot of very interesting things in the Feral Audio Network. We're doing a new thing where we take a little break and do Feral Audio.
I didn't get that, the point of that transition.
It's an experimental thing. It was my idea.
I thought you were sending up that kind of plug.
No, nope.
Do you want a musical theme for that? Do you want to make
No, I think it's better to just have silence and then you go with that.
Okay.
Feral Audio, let's talk about these kids for a second. I mean...
Feral Audio.
I mean, sure, if you're a burnt kid...
Feral Audio, my favorite audio.
And there are groups of people out there who have it worst. Burnt kids and people with tumors and things. But Feral Audio makes no money. They're just a collective of brilliant people doing podcasting just for the fuck of it.
That's right.
They're good people.
Because Young Dustin is about the work.
Yeah. He just hangs out.
There he is.
Dustin Marshall, everybody.
Marshall, the founder of Feral Audio.
Only 12 years old. He's only 12 years old. People don't know that about Dustin
Marshall.
His
trademark cap and headphones. Yep. He's never without them. He's like a cartoon character.
When to take the headphones off.
He was orphaned in 1892.
See him walking up and down Franklin Avenue in his cap and headphones, listening to podcasts.
His life, truly, his headstone will say,
Dustin Marshall, Dustin Marshall.
He's a little newsy.
Headphones and a hat. Deep. Well, I was going to do a rap bridge for that. Can I do a rap bridge? Deep to the U to the S to the T to the I to the N. All right, that's it.
That was your spelling.
That's a very popular rap trope, spelling.
It's but the to the, yeah. Yeah, Dustin Marshall's headstone will definitely have the words extra, extra on them.
It'll have little stone headphones over the tombstone. Yeah, yeah.
Read all about it.
There'll be real headphones, and you can hear his plaintive wails from beyond the grave.
Yeah, you can put them on.
I'm alive! Gather ye rosebuds while ye may.
I'm down here trying to court Mark Maron. Mark Maron, did he go over to Mark Maron's grave and he's like, I don't need you. So it's a gold rush right now, the podcast industry. Urbaniak, you played Crumb in
the movie
American
Splendor. Yeah, I did.
Well, that was exciting. Was there any direction? Did you research?
Well, I was when that audition came in. You audition for these things as an actor, and usually you go, "Well, I'll do the best I can." And when that audition came in, and it was 2001 that audition came in on the answering machine. We had answering machines back then, and they said,
exposition from your mom. You'd come in like your Catwoman. Oh, James. When are you going to meet the right girl?
The answering machine trope. And then they said, you're auditioning for this movie called American Splendor to play Robert Crumb. And I thought, that part is mine. No one else is more qualified. I'm thin. I'm tall. I'm an amateur cartoonist.
I saw Crumb.
I saw Crumb, and I'm a fan of his work. What more? Have a hat like that in my closet.
Was Crumb out? Crumb had been out. Did you?
Oh my God! I saw Crumb, and it came out. That's a masterpiece. That movie.
Oh, it's amazing.
And then I watched that like a loop. Then I auditioned. And the auditions for American Splendor were September 10th, 2001, 9/10.
Then what happened?
Then the callback was like 6 weeks later. I had to wait forever. It's true, the auditions were in downtown New York. The auditions were in downtown New York on Canal Street at Good Machine, and it was illegal to go downtown for like 4 weeks.
Fucking terrorists.
All right.
They almost fucked up my getting
was
that
9/11
part.
An inside job?
I gave you a real good segue there, and it's true.
I just watched two documentaries today, and
I walked into the drawing room earlier today, and Dan was sitting next to Dino, and Dan was clearly in the middle of...
rant about the melting point of steel.
Yes.
I've become one of these people.
Is that conspiracy guy, what's his face? Barky McGee, you know, the one who's always...
McGruff?
Who's the famous conspiracy guy?
McGruff is the crime dog.
Alex Jones, thank you. Barky McGee, I call him. Was he in these documentaries, Alex Jones?
Alex, no, I don't. Not that
All
I remember.
Right, because he just makes a living like making shit up.
But I remember back in the day, anybody who was talking about the boiling point of metal and the pancake and all this shit, I was so turned off by that stuff because I was like, precisely because I was like, you know what? No, there's not a fucking, don't romanticize this. This is an actual, Jesus Christ, these people died and it's a fucking big deal. And more importantly, it's about the government's kind of ineptitude. That's what, like, I remember being in therapy sessions and saying to therapists, like, I'm just angry about this. I just, these people, they didn't do anything. I was like, well, we pay our taxes. You're supposed to be in this no-fly zone. Like I thought you're supposed to clip your Dilbert cartoons and you have your coupons for cat food. And I thought the whole exchange was supposed to ultimately have to do with security. You can just. I was mad about it back then. I was mad. And I never wanted to hear anybody saying, like, well, you know, they never, Flight 77 is the kind of metal that on the plane the tail couldn't have. I was like, those people are quacks. I don't want to talk to those people because they're trying to JFK-ify something that is actually deeply patriotic, spiritual, like, important, personal. But maybe I hit some tipping point or... I don't know.
You watch?
I watched these just weird documentaries, whatever was available. I don't know what happened to me today. I just drifted into some weird cloud. Maybe it's because Community. I was looking for an escape. The pressures, you know. I just wanted a Sunday to just like escape into a cloud.
Well, you should get fired again.
And I that would help. I watched this documentary called Press for Truth, I think it was called, or Press, yeah. And then another one that was called Zero. The latter is the more like sci-fi kind of like what's the melting point of steel kind of stuff. Press for Truth is actually kind of impressive because it's very deeply personal. It's about the wives of victims like going just like on a human level. They're just going. They're not saying, I think that spaghetti was the motivation. Like they're just saying, no one's giving us a satisfactory answer. Anyways, guys, what do you think? I don't know.
What's their theory?
Well, in the first one, there was like this huge thing about Pakistan. I'm sorry that Kumail's not here to...
to be bummed out.
There's all this. I can't keep track of it. Your head starts to spin. That's the thing that conspiracy theorists have.
But
as an advantage.
Is this the thing where they're saying, "Oh well, it was the American government did it themselves"?
Well, certainly the second of the two, the one that's called Zero. Yeah, it's all about. Absolutely. The implication is that it's an inside job.
Dan, if you had to guess right now with what limited information and intelligence that you have,
as is my job,
you know, I'm not saying you have to be right, but if you had to go from your gut to what facts, information you currently have, what do you think happened?
Honestly, I swear to God, I'm not kidding. Like, I have no idea. I don't know. I swear.
Do you
to
think
God.
A plane hit the Pentagon?
God damn it! I watched these two things today.
From your gut, Dan. TMZ's not here.
Yesterday I would have said yes. There is no gut. That's the problem. Like there is no like they. I watched two documentaries today. Here's the problem with conspiracy theorists.
You're still processing is what's going
they
on.
They get to conspiracy theorists like they're dangerous. That's a dangerous industry. They get to leave out things that don't service them. Like there's something marketable about saying JFK didn't get killed by Lee Harvey
That's
Oswald.
Right. That's why this guy Alex Jones like he makes a living doing this.
You're incentivized every inch of every magic bullet's pathway. You're incentivized to fudge, and that's not cool when you're dealing with stuff that people actually.
Would you be more content knowing that it actually happened as reported, or that there actually was like you know. Hocus pocus going on with the government.
I would be way more sad. I hope to God that 19 fundamentalist guys from Saudi Arabia climbed into planes and did horrible things and flew them into things and that was that. I would much rather life be that like that. These things take you down a rabbit hole, though. You just go like you're so unsatisfied by that truth.
James, this is the point in the show where the guest has to start interviewing Dan.
Yeah. Because James, what do you think? James, come on, tell us. James, tell us.
Well, the government.
You're Dr. Venture. What do you think?
9/11 was an inside job.
See?
Dr. Venture doesn't say see. I think the government already, well, the people in power already had a wet dream for many years that some tragic event would happen that would allow them to go off preemptively, knocking off, like, dictators and stuff.
Yeah.
And you know, there's this thing called the Project for the New American Century, which... What?
PNAC.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Those are the letters that...
It's like we're in Washington Square Park here. And there's a thing in there that says we really want to go off and you know, knock off dictators, but we need a really good incentive to do it. We need, like, a Pearl Harbor. And then...
But then you'd think they'd be really good at
going
in and knocking off.
And then September 2001, Christmas came early to the people who wrote that document. Yeah. So I can see why you can kind of conflate that desire and change it around a little bit and say those people made that happen, but
except
they didn't.
That,
although they were
no
wishing
dictators
for it.
Ever get knocked off, and the economy is not booming, and there is no like I could see how those guys would be their wet dream, but I don't think they engineered it.
No, I don't think
because
they engineered
obviously
it,
it did not work out.
I mean, GW was—he's not acting that he's shocked. He's just sitting in that fucking kindergarten class for like 10 minutes, going, "I don't know what to do. I honestly don't know what to do. This is never." I never thought it would lead up to this. And all I can do is sit here for 10 minutes.
As sexy as all conspiracy theories are and seem, when you watch these very convincing like documentaries about, like, hey, man, if the planes hit the Pentagon, where's the engines, Jack? Man, because the engines would be there because they made of titanium, my man. And you go, oh, shit, where are the engines? And that's all cool. But I don't think that that's endowing our government with better abilities to keep secrets and lie. I think they might actually be so inept. Lies that complicated seem absurd.
Also, to do that much weird shit. It's like in your wildest dreams, this government would be capable of
being a good government.
Circuitous, like. Yeah. Like stuff, and then if they
had that much brain power, the bridges wouldn't fall down while people were fucking driving across them.
Maybe it's just that when horrible shit happens, it's always chaotic. You always wonder how a piece of skull ended up on one wall. It never makes sense. And then you have 10 years.
What wall are you talking about right now?
It's a metaphorical wall of order in the wake of chaos.
Like Pink Floyd.
Okay.
Pink Floyd wall. It's not a real wall.
A beloved president is assassinated. Two towers come crumbling down. Like in a flash, like our world changes, and then we spend the next 15 years going like, okay, well, you find a candy wrapper on the floor, and you trace it back to the idea that hopefully there's more order than chaos in the world. But the truth is, boy, but man, I learned a lot about metallurgy today. They didn't let up.
I think you're receptive to these alternative histories, and that it's like, you're receptive to it because they're stories, and you adore stories, and you pay all stories respect.
They're
Thank
terrible
you.
Stories,
yeah.
though.
We we crave sense. We want order.
Yeah.
We'll never know, lots of things about history, but we choose to make order out of things out of chaos.
We know why it happened, and it still doesn't make any sense. So
I'm gonna go home and Google the right phrase for debunking the debunking of the debunking and stuff, because I just heard too much today about the melting point of steel. It just disturbed me too much.
I want you to have another vodka and just fucking dive into a real conspiracy right now. I want you to, like, I see your leg tapping eagerly right now. I think you're on a threshold of really revealing.
No, I got it. America wasn't in those buildings. They evacuated them. I don't know what you're talking about. All right. So
don't chicken out on me now, man. I think you have your
no,
own.
No, I'm look, I am a human being. You know what I think was amazing? The most amazing thing was that there was one guy in both documentaries I saw. There's like these little cheesy videos that like people make. There's one guy in both of them whose son died in 9/11, and I loved like his catchphrase in the second of the two documentaries. He was like, he's like this like good-natured, like, dad, like, that was talking the way I hope my dad would talk if I died in a horrible tragedy that didn't have an abundance of forensic evidence surrounding it. He just said, hey, look, I'm not a conspiracy theorist. My son got murdered. I'm trying to find out who killed him. It's fucking, like, really compelling. Yeah, I was like, oh, shit, I want that to be my dad.
Can you dedicate...
And I will do that for my son.
Can you dedicate an entire season of Community to answering that question? What if you did that? What if
it just takes a turn. Donald Glover leaves, and then, like, there's just, like, this plane hits Greendale, and then... It's a paper airplane, so it's charming, but, like... It's like a paintball plane...
I dare you.
And then
I, Jeff Davis, dare you, Dan Harmon.
It's just the season of paintball. God, is there any way I can make people happy with 13 episodes? Speaking of which, I don't know, man. All paintball. What if all paintball? That wouldn't make people happy. What if no paintball? That wouldn't make people happy. I'm not complaining, but I am under a personal gun.
What would you do if you had... Not that budget is a concern necessarily, but like if you had your dream, like have there been ideas kicked around in the writers' room as you're putting a new season together, where you would say like, God, I wish, what if we could just do this? Like, what would be one thing that you wish you could do but you can't get away with?
What if Donald was in the show? I just keep. It's just been 5 weeks of us going. No, nothing like that. Honestly, I never. No, I want to reground the characters and do like awesome, compelling shit. I think every kind of community fan would agree that like Remedial Chaos and Dungeons and Dragons are like the, at the center of the Venn diagram of like everybody being happy. You got the shippers are happy, the psychology is there. It's like it's paintball is awesome, but that's like a slight offshoot of episodes that are, you know, you have to take the characters seriously. And of course we're going to do that for the fifth season. So I'm not that worried. I'm just a little worried that you only get 13, and I'm worried. Okay, I'm worried.
How many have you written so far?
Zero. I've taken up heroin, and I'm just sitting in my office. I just keep staring at old Vanity Fair articles about the show, just eating grilled octopus and shooting up. No, we've broken like five episodes, like broken the stories.
Yeah. All right.
Why do you ask, James?
I was just curious.
You want to be in one of them?
Please, if there's a part for a persnickety.
All right, James, we gotta let James go, but before we do, we gotta.
I don't mind if there's a persnickety passive aggressive professor who makes his way through there who has an affair with Britta. You know, that's. Let's throw that out there.
It's that easy.
Yeah. Just throwing that out there.
Yeah,
just,
anybody know, that wants that.
Same, just like the 9/11 guys, you don't have to take it to heart. Just throwing it out, opening a door in your mind.
Anything you want to plug or anything while you're up here? Like, I don't know, are you writing a book or appearing in a magazine water skiing
outside? I
don't
know, there's like stuff, but the Venture Brothers, and just listen to the podcast. Getting On with James Urbaniak at feralaudio.com.
Definitely listen to it. Thank you, James Urbaniak.
Thank you for having me, yay!
James Urbaniak.
I don't know what I'm doing. It wasn't out of my outline. I was like, bring James Urbaniak out, then ask him if 9/11 was an inside job.
And then never ask him another question. Of all the people that you've not interviewed while they were out here, he took it the best.
He's a good sport. I mean, if he wants to stay, he can stay. But he had a hard out. I'm a bad interviewer. I've been forthcoming about that.
What do you think is your what keeps you from being a good interviewer?
Concern about other people.
Right.
Definitely.
No, that's not true, because you are concerned about the people, but you get more concerned.
I'm concerned about how they feel about me.
Right. So you start interviewing yourself through their eyes.
Yeah. So like my inner. Yeah. It's like if Gore Vidal came up here, I'd be like, is there mustard on my face?
Bring somebody up from the audience right now and interview him. Just try to interview him.
Okay. This guy's so excited.
Okay.
Okay.
What's your name, sir?
Gibran.
Gibran?
Gibran, yeah.
Gibran, where are you from, Gibran?
I came down from Canada. I drove down.
Today?
Yeah, today.
For real?
It was just a straight... No. I drove down this week. It was about 30 hours.
Which province are you from?
Alberta.
See, Dan, what I'm doing right now is... What I'm doing is interviewing.
Yeah, exactly. Fuck you, Gibran. Get out of here. It's done.
Gibran?
What's your birthstone? Garnet. Okay. What's left for me?
Okay, yeah. So now, Dan, take it from there.
Okay, Gibran, how tall was your mom?
5'1".
See? I don't know. Like, well, that's weird. Dan, you're taller than 5'1".
Dan, a stranger is on stage with you right now. You've never met this fellow.
Okay.
He raised his hand eagerly.
All right.
Is there no drive?
Right, Gibran. Like, okay, you're from Canada.
I am.
Came to the show.
I did.
Your name's Gibran.
It is.
How long are you in town?
I'm leaving tomorrow morning.
Why?
Because once I've seen this, what else is there to do?
Right. I'm a good interviewer. Thank you. Hey, Gibran, what's with the weird name?
Wow. It's a gotcha question, then. It's a gotcha question.
Fair question, I'd say.
Is it a common name? What part of Canada?
Calgary, Alberta.
All right, I got a lot of people. Okay. All right, forget your name.
Don't worry
about that.
At once.
That's stupid. Google his name. Who cares? Gibran, what are you most afraid of? Don't say spiders.
Slipping into solipsism.
So okay, like me. So you'd be a bad interviewer.
Probably.
Yeah.
All right, now Gibran, interview Dan.
Right, act like you don't. Yeah, you don't know me. Or no, you can act like you know me. That's okay. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to control the interview.
Dan.
When two solipsists go to war.
Dan. Tell me.
Both guys just look at the floor.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry about my friend.
Tell me what it felt like to play D&D for the first time.
Oh my God.
That's a great question, Gibran.
Thank you. I love D&D.
Oh yeah?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I honestly can barely remember, but like one of the most remarkable memories I have that marked that is that I remember mowing my lawn because I had to mow my lawn, and I remember that I hated mowing the lawn because it's just repetitive activity, but. And this is before iPods. It's before you can occupy your brain with anything. And I just remember mowing my suburban front lawn, going back and forth. And the whole time I was just thinking about what we had just done in D&D. It's just like, so like this awakening, this idea that I had a different life, that I was a different person, and that these things had happened, that they were scenes like in a movie that had never existed. Good question. What a good interviewer.
Now, Dan.
Let me counter with this.
Yeah, yeah.
What's your favorite color?
Blue. No, pink. Sorry, I know we're not supposed to do Monty Python jokes.
No, Monty Python jokes are fine.
Well, what's it like to interview me?
Follow-up question.
All right, okay, all right. So you like, why do you like D&D? How old are you? What race do you hate the most?
Yeah. Good question.
Which feet of yours is bigger?
I hate gnomes.
So you're an elf.
No, I'm sorry. Okay.
Yeah.
How old are you?
35.
35. Okay. And so what was you answered the same question? Yeah. What was your big memory with D&D?
Really, that was just so that I could answer that question. I knew that this was coming. So. I played for the first time when I was 9, and I actually didn't even know that I was playing Dungeons and Dragons. It just came in this like little red box, and a guy across the street from a friend, he played this game, and I had no idea that you could like just envelop yourself in another world and like create all these things that just were so alien to the life that you live.
The idea that it's actually okay to say, even though I'm just sitting here being a fat guy with zits on his face, I'm actually doing this other thing. I'm actually this other person. Which is, like we're all familiar with it. It's under our nose, but the emotional experience of, like, actually, yeah, I shit, man.
I mean, allowing yourself to, like, be heroic or be, like, be the center of your own universe. I mean, I guess we all are the center of our own universes, but it's on a grander scale. Yeah.
So what do they do in Canada? Just on a typical day. I'll start. It's 8 in the morning. I'll be a Canadian rooster, which I'm sure sounds different from an American rooster. Cuckoo, cuckoo.
Eh?
I'm sure it's got some weird use of you in there. And you all wake up and go, oh, I'm about to eat some breakfast.
We watch hockey. We wake up, we turn on the TV. There's no like channel changing on the remote. It turns on and off, and then it's just TV at a really loud volume. It's just hockey. And hockey at a really loud volume.
Yeah, or Colin Mochrie is on there, or hockey. That's it, right?
I feel like every time, everything I've ever seen on the internet that is community related, like where someone's like making a really creative GIF or doing like a good YouTube video, there's always that City TV logo in the, and that's Canadian, right? It's
we're
you
really
fuckers.
Good.
You're not paying for anything.
We're really great at pirating.
Yeah. But you also like, you know, you love good TV.
Yeah. Well.
And by good, I mean my.
We know that what you meant. Yeah. We know.
Are you born and raised in Calgary?
Yeah, I am.
What's that street? Is it 17th Street where the bars are?
Yeah, 17th Ave.
17th Ave.
That's right. Yeah. Were you there?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
I've been many times. And is the bar called like the Crown and Thorn?
Rose and Crown.
Rose and Crown. Yeah. I love it. Yeah.
That's Alberta?
That's right, Alberta.
I have relatives. My family, I had a family reunion in Alberta.
Oh, really?
Just so you know.
Where?
I don't know. I didn't go.
Oh.
I just... A bunch of people related to me were like, hey, come up here.
If you ever need a surrogate to go for the next one, you just
I'll send you.
Yeah.
Now, Dan, we
there was a lady running around. My parents went, and they said, God, it was so annoying. There was this lady running around and talking about how we were all six degrees separated from a pope. And my mom was like, we all are. Like, everyone is. Like, cavemen are. It doesn't make any... All right. Anyways.
Now, Dan, we're learning more about you in this interview than Gibran. We cannot leave... We cannot get him off the stage until we've learned at least equal amounts about Gibran before he goes.
So okay.
I leave that to you.
So people who are listening to the podcast at home, we haven't specified yet. Gibran is a 7'2" African-American.
Tattooed like Queequeg and Moby Dick.
He has tribal tats over the left side of his face.
He's holding an ivory spear.
purple streak through
his face. I have something to say about that because my fiance, she sometimes when she meets new people and they ask about me, then she says, oh, his name is Gibran. They're always like, oh, he must be big and black. They're so disappointed when they see me.
Dan, follow-up questions.
If you were black, like, what would you do first?
And last.
Because for real, I would go, dude, Jeff, let's all answer this question. If you woke up tomorrow black, like, there's something you'd do, right? I'm asking myself this.
I would instantly go fuck with white people as hard as I could.
But how? Where?
Huh? I would just good-naturedly intimidate them.
See, I think I would, I don't know, but I was about to say I would go to some mythical place where only black people are allowed, but I wouldn't. That wouldn't. It wouldn't. That doesn't work that way.
It's called prison. Oh! Good night, everybody. You fucking pussies.
He walked into that.
Yeah.
No, but it's not like there's some bar that's called like the Black Gentleman. Well,
we live in Los Angeles. There are neighborhoods where you could go into where there are places that you could.
Well, there's places where if I walked in being white, I would feel less comfortable. But I don't think if you walked in being black, you'd be like, "Hey, put it on my tab."
Well, would you walk into a bar in Inglewood and like just try to?
I don't know from Inglewood. That's my thing. Like I don't know. I don't know. Like that's the thing. Like I haven't put that much thought into it. I just know that there's like a if I walked into a place and everyone was black and I was the only white guy, I know that I would feel like an interloper and like bummed out. But I know from going to junior high that they were not as bummed out about that as a bunch of white people with a black person walking in would be.
So I
don't think there would be any profit from walking in. Like I guess I'm just thinking about it now. Like if I woke up black, if I had the superpower, press a button on my bracelet.
First of all,
I'm black now. I'm black.
But how about that? When you wake up black, like just like you get to pick what kind of black person you are.
I'd be super sexy black. Like, well, that's a different thing. I'm assuming I'm a dumpy black guy.
How about you get to be any black person you want? Male, female, sexy, otherwise.
I just get to be straight up handsomest black guy in the world.
Yeah, you could be like a funny like wisecracking old 50-year-old black lady. You know, like
I would just be a strapping fucking amazing black guy that was able to jump over a car. What do you? I get to choose.
You get to choose.
Well, then I'm mega black.
John.
I'm super, super in the James Bond of black men. I'm Billy D. Williams, 1982. I'm like fucking. I'm just walking in, fucking like.
Okay, but okay. So you're Billy D. Williams, sexy Billy D. Williams. Where
he's not even black enough. I don't even know why. All right, hey, fuck you, people. Fuck you, honkies. I just pressed my black button. I'll tell you who's black enough. Billy Dean could go fuck himself. Yeah. What are you talking about?
All right,
I'm
so,
gonna be a fucking rich, visceral, fucking black guy.
So Dan, you're mega black. You're
I'm super fucking like potent black.
Okay. What? It's cock-a-doodle-doo. The alarm clock goes off. What do you do first? You get up. You have a.
I eat a big black breakfast. Right.
Which consists of what?
Just, like tons of protein and. I don't know. Like,
okay,
I'm so glad you're asking these questions. I don't know.
What's on your plan of action? You only have 24 hours of this.
Okay, well, I'm so much pressure. I go to some. There's got to be some black parlor where you can like download with other black people about what do you do. I don't know. I think that's. I don't know.
No, you don't. You don't have that. You are just a white
man.
I just
woke
up. Right,
I'm at my house. So.
Oh my God! I'm a sexy. Physically fit, beautiful black man.
All right, so Aaron's next to me.
This is your fantasy, man.
Well, Aaron's like, "Holy shit, you're black." I'm like, "Yeah." We probably gotta.
How does she
knock
know
that
you?
Out?
How does she know it's?
Don't you? Is that wrong to say?
Well, when you say knock that out, what are we talking about?
Well, I mean, if she woke up with blue hair, it'd be like, hey, you know, viva la difference, you know? Let's fucking do it.
So we're assuming she wakes up and she's comfortable and she knows she can recognize through physical...
Because again, you said, I'm not the Dan Harmon version of a black guy.
No,
I'm not.
You're...
I'm not like a big dumpy... I got to choose to be a giant... I have a wingspan.
Yeah.
My chest is like a Buick's grill. My biceps are the size of a child's head. I just look like a cartoon.
Right. So that's what you think black people are, man?
No, that's not fair.
They're people. No, it isn't fair.
You said I got to choose what kind of black guy
you
I was.
You think children's heads are shaped like biceps? I don't want you to be a black person, Dad.
Well, I don't...
Okay, so you wake up and you're Kevin Garnett. You're fucking...
Who's that?
He's a very...
Okay, now we learn more about you.
You're just a very... Tall,
strapping.
Physically fit, strapping, good-looking black gentleman.
Yeah.
What? You have 24 hours to do something. Right. What's on the fucking docket?
All right. I fuck Aaron, but good. She's earned it.
Okay.
Quick breakfast. Like, high protein.
Right.
I don't know what.
Right.
Out to my car.
You get to pick a car too. You get to pick a new car.
No, I don't. No, don't, because you're trying to trick me into being racist. Yeah. And I'm not.
Well, I'm not. Well done, my proud Nubian friend.
I go down to my fucking silver Prius,
okay.
and I slide into it proudly with my cosmopolitan black body,
right.
And I go to the drawing room, my usual haunt, because I want to know what it's like to walk in there black.
Okay.
And I go and I order my usual drink. I would like a Kettle One on the Rocks, please.
And okay.
Suave like that.
Okay, here you are. That'll be $6.
Thank you. It's good to drink at a place that understands me. I don't know, just feeling them out.
Okay. So let's say that they're totally fine.
I go over to the jukebox.
Right.
I'm going to put on some Lil Wayne.
Little or Lil? Because there's no Lil Wayne on the jukebox.
I'm not going to fuck around with the jukebox. I don't care.
Okay.
That was a joke. Okay, so I got to drink at my usual haunt. All right, now what am I going to do?
24 hours.
All right.
21 hours.
All right, I'm black. But I look good. I'm like fit. Like I'm ripped.
Oh, yeah, you're in
you're in peak physical condition.
So then I'm going to do shit that has nothing to do with being black. I just want to be ripped.
Well, then you can just go to the gym, dude.
No, that's the whole point. You don't have to go to the gym.
No, I'm saying...
That's what
you don't
like
have to be black to be in good shape. Or to fuck your girlfriend properly.
I know that. Fine. Fine.
Let's hear it for Jabron, everybody. Jabron.
Thank you, Jabron. Thank you.
Can I just make a shout out?
Sure, sure.
Happy birthday to my cousin Ivan, and eat your heart out, Les Wong. Thank you.
All right.
Jabron.
Canadians.
Dan, I have to say, that was a hell of an interview. You really are bad at it. You don't know other people exist. That guy sat on stage here with a microphone in his hand, never spoken to it, and you simply didn't care at all.
Yeah, but he was like, he was like, "Ooh, I want to come up here." I mean, how do you know he deserves it? Maybe that was karma.
But he said he was solipsistic, and so are you in that
he
way.
He did good. He did fine.
He did great.
He got everything he was going to get.
Certainly.
Jabron from Canada. What was he going to get? Were we going to carry him out on our shoulders?
No, we wanted to find out if you could actually invest interest in another human being.
All right. What's your name?
Anatoly.
Anatoly? Oh, shit.
Anatoly, get on stage, Anatoly.
Okay. All right, Anatoly, that sounds like an exotic name.
Yeah, the names are getting weirder.
Jeff, I'll... Anatoly, where are you from?
From Russia.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
All right. You're just visiting?
No, I study here.
What's that?
Study.
Oh, you're studying? Where? What school?
In UCLA.
Oh, okay. Yeah. It's part of an exchange program?
No. Just came here to study. Study directing.
How do you...
You're studying directing?
Yeah.
Of, film, TV?
Yeah.
So were you directing in Russia?
No. I just came to study.
You just came over and said, I think I'll try directing.
Yeah. Why is the whole note?
Well, I mean, it's just, a lot of us, a lot of directors in this audience are out of work right now. And
so I'm sorry, but fuck you guys.
All right.
Wow. As a Russian, at some point, he must break you.
How old are you?
I'm 23.
God. Oh, man. Just your life pulsing through your little sinewy Russian veins. Do they have black people in Russia?
Really few.
Yeah.
Like in my town, I think it was three black people.
So how
what were their names?
and we're gonna check. If one's Jabron, we're gonna smell her out. were your parents rich? Would you call them rich?
No.
Middle class, lower class.
Yeah, I think middle class.
Yeah. So how do you get hooked up? I don't understand. Can you explain the process that gets you to get to come over here to UCLA to study directing? Just for those of us listening to Russia right now,
it's called airlines.
Yeah. You may say so. Actually, I can start from far along when I was born, but I don't know. I like movies. I like TV shows. I think I watched a couple episodes of Community.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
You saw a couple episodes?
I think it was episode about Inspector Space-Time Convention. It was best episode. I like your job.
But that was fourth season. You said.
Yeah.
It's all right. It's okay. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, I know.
Okay. He can't tell. So you just like is this the world we live in now? You're just sitting in Russia and you go like, I want to direct TV, and you just fucking like up and came over on a plane. And nobody grabbed you at the border and was like, what are you doing? What are you trying to do? Get out of here!
You have to get a student visa.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, student visa.
Yeah, it's pretty hard.
How long do those last? 4 years?
No, it's while you study. You can study like almost all your life. So it doesn't matter.
So you just have to keep filling out a form and going, I don't know that much yet.
Yeah.
Do you have friends over here?
Not really many, but like a few people.
You just are you in a dorm room at UCLA?
No. I just rent in a room.
In Echo Park.
Oh, really? Just a one-bedroom apartment?
No, it's a three-bedroom with two guys.
So, how did you find the roommates?
On Craigslist.
Craigslist. Yeah.
And so, what do you want to make? I'm sorry. I hate to interrupt because you're
jumping. Jump in. I'm so fucking tired.
Sorry. No.
I thought I did a good job.
I instinctively jumped in as Jeff Davis because I saw you flagging over there, and you held your cup close to your lips, and you wanted a sip.
Yeah.
But you were doing a really good interview there.
He's so Russian. Just talk to him, Jeff.
What part of Russia are you from?
It's middle of Russia. It's a town called Orenburg, and no one heard about it. So.
Now, are you
one guy would go, woo!
Oh, yeah!
But I think of as a Russian student coming over here to direct, are you a big fan of Russian film, or are you a film student, or are you more of a TV fan?
I don't know.
I mean, there's directors that love their that love their foreign film, love their classical films, you're a big scholar of filmmakers. Are you more just want to do what you want to make?
I think
that's great.
I don't really like some Russian old films, but. Now it's really terrible business in Russia. Every only one movie out of 100 is worth to watch, and so it's nothing to do in there. So,
yeah, who do you think is interviewing you better right now? Me or Jeff? I feel like his interview is more I don't know, it's more boring. Mine's more personal.
Anatoly, who's the most passive aggressive interviewer right now? if you could make whatever you wanted, what kind of show or what would you make as a director?
Do you want to do TV or movies?
Oh, for sure TV. It's
really for sure TV. I mean, that's...
because it's if you direct on TV, you have 2 weeks of work and get money and buy. Yeah. And you don't have to sit and developing for 5 years and without money. So,
what's your favorite American TV show? Or not your favorite, but just a random one. Just
a
name
random
one.
Mad Men.
Mad Men. Mad Men. Oh,
yeah. Whoop whoop.
Would you want to direct you want to direct our stuff like that? Is that what you would want to do?
I don't.
You are starting directing, right?
Yeah.
All right, wait, Jeff and I are going to do a scene, and you're going to direct us.
Yeah, for sure, yeah.
All right. We're going to do it from Mad Men. We're going to try, it'll be from Mad Men, not a real scene, but, and then you will do one take, and then you adjust us. You say cut, and then you adjust us, and then we'll do another take. Okay, so I'm Don Draper.
I've never seen it, so I'll be Al Sharp.
Al Sharp? All right, I'm Don Draper. You're Al Sharp.
I'm a new intern named Al Sharp.
Okay.
Oh, Mr. Draper, I didn't realize you were going to be in this early.
Yeah, Al, I'm always going to be in this early when the Heinz account gets this fucked up.
I'm sorry. I was in here earlier, and I saw that somebody has spilled coffee all over the Heinz account.
It's not your job to worry about coffee spilling. It's your job to be a madman.
All right. Anatoly, give us notes. Give us notes.
So adjust us.
So what can we do better in that scene?
First of all, you need to change your clothes.
Okay.
He was talking to Dan. I think you'll find that I'm properly dressed for a Mad Men scene.
Okay, that's true. I can't. I mean, I'll.
Okay. Well, describe what you would have him wear. Like, what should he be wearing right now?
Something like you're wearing right now.
Something like I'm wearing. Yes. So should everybody, Anatoly. Thank you. All right. I like this guy. He's a good director.
Yeah. And so far, he's a great wardrobe supervisor.
I think like if someone here like have a TV show, if he want to hire me, I don't know.
I feel like I just got insulted, but I can't tell. I don't know.
I didn't hear what you said. Say again.
I think like maybe someone may hire me to make a TV show, like if he have fun.
You should get a TV show. They should give Dan Harmon a TV show.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, okay. The audience should hire him to direct a TV show.
Yeah. Wait, but now you have to give us direction and tell us how to do that scene better. It can't just be wardrobe.
I think, first of all, this scene must be written really. It
You need a script.
Yeah. Yes, a script.
All right.
You're a producer.
Oh, that's it.
Yeah? That's it. Okay, so better written. We'll do it again, but better written.
All right. Yeah. He needs a better script, and the people need to be dressed better. This is confirming a lot of theories I've had about the profession of director. I've had a sneaking suspicion that I know what goes on when I'm not around.
Do you want to try it again? Better directed or better written, rather?
Better written. Yeah. Oh, okay. Better written. Okay.
We'll do it again. Right. You're in a skinny mod suit, and the scene is better written.
I'm impeccably dressed. Okay. What was your name? Army Sharper?
I'm Al Sharpton, and you're Don Draper. Sharper.
Okay.
But I'm a young intern.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Oh. Draper.
You'd be better off saying winter, because a cold wind's going to blow up your asshole.
I got the Heinz account right here on the floor, but 57 reasons to fuck you in the ass.
Then pour it over every fry, because it's 1968 and Vietnam, motherfucker!
Anatoly, everybody, thank you, sir.
You did it. Nice, good director.
Anatoly.
You did good.
That is good directing.
Anatoly. You saw him here first. He's the new Spielberg. All right, let's get Spencer up here. Let's play some. Yeah. Spencer! Get your satchel.
Hello, Spencer Crittenden. How are you, sir?
Hey. Hey.
Any new fun stories about being my assistant?
Okay, so one of the writer's rooms is like, there's a long table in. There's a room for about like 5 or 6 seats on either side. And it's just full of clutter. And this one time, Dan was all like, Spencer, give me a 5-hour energy. And I was like, I already have one. And I pulled one out of my auxiliary pocket because that's where I keep it. And I was on the other side of this long table, and I slid it all the way down the table, and it got like right to him, and he caught it, and everyone was like, ooh.
Yeah, there's not a lot. I mean, everything Spencer does, though, has that air of mystery to it.
Yeah, it's really weird.
Spencer came in. I told him to go get me a sweatshirt out of my car, and then he came in at one point where, because it's season 5, so everyone's very quiet, a bunch of very smart, funny writers in there. But, like, and I don't think I'd have it any other way, I guess. Like, we hired a bunch of people who are, like, very enamored with community. We got a bunch of geniuses in there who are brilliant scripts, but the upshot is it feels like teaching a Harvard law class, like that writer's room. It's just like a bunch of young, smart, funny people just sitting there. They don't physically raise their hands before they speak, but none of them speak over each other. They don't. Isn't there one of the writers here tonight? Is Alex here?
I think Alex,
are you here? Will you come up here for a second?
Yeah.
This could be at his peril. We don't know. I mean, yeah, just grab a mic for a second. I heard you were here in the writer's room. His Canon Films t-shirt.
The what?
Canon
what?
Films? Oh, no, that's OCP. OCP. Oh, shit. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So what's, you know, it, what's it like working for me?
It's great.
All right. I mean, but it's quiet in that room, right?
Yeah, I you described it well. I mean, the genius part was nice.
But it's that people aren't quiet because I'm a bad person,
no,
right?
No. Well, I can speak only for myself. I mean, I think, you know, we're all awkward people.
Because I'm amazing.
It involves you, but not in a... It more in the amazing way than in the...
Like you're going like, oh, God, Dan's talking like about what should happen in this episode. Why would we ever want to say anything else?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I'm on one half of a bit that's going on right now, and I don't understand.
And I'm getting a little insecure. Like, I have blinders on. I go like, okay, well, I hired everybody, and they're all very quiet, so I'm going to make the conscious decision that everybody's being really quiet because I'm amazing. But then there's a little voice in the back of my head that goes, you're embarrassing yourself.
Well, I'm stuck in my own head, sort of the way you are in your head, so I know that if I say yes, then I'm going to feel like I'm kissing your ass because
right.
You're my boss.
Right. The other writers are listening, and
right.
then they go, oh,
the
Alex was on Harmontown.
Speaking for myself, I'm very excited about this job, and I don't want to fuck it up.
Right.
So if I'm going to, like, speak up, I want to, I care how it lands.
Right. Well, you're doing great, but let's just run down the other writers. So... What do you think? Ryan Ridley, like... right? Clearly only got hired because he's a friend of mine.
Ryan took a lot of abuse the first week or so.
All right. No, okay. Thank you. I don't know what you could possibly do. If there's anything you want to plug, Alex Rubin's Rubintown.
Yeah. Community Season 5 starting...
Community Season 5. See you at Comic-Con. All right. Alex Rubin's. See what I'm going through?
Did you see his pants, his shorts? Those were awesome. I want those shorts. No, what? I like Alex. I think he's a great writer.
He seems like a good guy. Of course he's a great writer. I read his script.
What are you going through?
Going through being in a room with 14 people whose scripts I've read. They're all great writers. And they're just like, I'm kind of going like, okay, so if Troy is allergic to cheese, then what if Abed said this? And that's kind of like... Very quiet.
Yeah, I wanna talk a lot, but that's not my job, obviously. But I feel like, Jesus Christ, these are silences that are... These are pregnant pauses. Like,
it's not just me.
No,
noticing it.
It gets awkward. Like, I think one time I clocked in about 3 minutes of silence. One time.
But in your opinion, okay, as a 12-year-old, however old you are.
Okay.
It's not...
Should I regress for this question?
It's not because I'm untalented, right? It's because I'm super talented, right?
I don't know what it
lie
is.
Lie to me, lie to me. It's because I intimidate everyone.
We love you, Dan.
It's because, you know, just... Your intellect is very tangible, you know? And they feel it.
Spencer, if I play the music, will you give us your internal monologue during one of the community writing silences?
Nobody's talking. Still, nobody's talking. My mind reels with possibilities of things that could be said. Good ideas, bad ideas, they all bubble up, but why isn't anybody fucking talking?
That's how you write a TV show.
I think it's because they all have 200 IQs. I think they're all Onion, Harvard, the fucking...
Yeah, well, it's like he was saying. It's like you're all up in your head, and you're like, these guys are staring at me like I'm brilliant or an asshole. And there he's in his head, and he's like, man, this guy's looking at me like I'm either about to say something genius or a big asshole. And like all the other writers are like, oh, man, he just said something good. I look like an asshole. And that's probably what everyone's thinking about this whole time, just assholes.
That's true. But in the meantime, 13 episodes of the greatest television show in history, Hang in the Lurch.
Yeah.
They're just hanging there.
Tell them that.
So the heroes are going to rise and fall. Like, well, this is the fucking, I'll do it myself.
Punch a wall.
Sure,
be like, ah!
You think I should get hardcore?
2.5 minutes into one of these 3-minute silences, just go crazy? Ah!
Just go, ah! What am I doing here?
Exactly.
But then they'll be like, what do you mean? What? You hired me. And I'll be like, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
You should get Anatoly to come in and direct how to run a writer's
room. You guys should dress different.
That's what we're teaching Russia, by the way. And I'm not surprised they're getting that message. It's empty stylistic masturbation. It's like, come on. You like Breaking Bad, though, right, Anatoly?
Actually, I didn't see it.
All right. Well, they dress very well in that show. Oh, boy. Whole planet's just gonna just collapse like a balloon culturally. We did it. America won. This is our punishment. We never knew what we were doing. Only thing we ever did was go, America's great! And now that's the culture? It's just like, duh. No, it's done. The only good shows are about people shooting up and dying. Like, we're celebrating our death.
But your show doesn't really fit into that, does it?
I mean, doesn't, Jeff.
I mean that sincerely.
Thank you, Jeff.
You're intentionally not playing ball with that paradigm.
That's correct, and it's a lot of pressure, isn't it?
It's a lot of pressure.
Yeah. Right, Alex? Yes. Okay.
Dan, I'm going to play the Spencer music, but you're going to do Dungeon Master voice when you're helming the writer's room.
Last season wasn't very good. But you found out you're not allowed to say that anymore. Seizing the power of the high road, you took it all the way to having permission to do whatever you want. But what will you do? Having had the right to do Muppets and animation removed from you creatively, you sought to figure out how you could possibly deliver a quality show under a historically low budget, while an insidious, evil studio looms above you, hating everything you do, demanding that you pitch it to them, but not having a right to say no to anything. Meanwhile, in the bowels underneath you, 16-year-old girls wait patiently with their Tumblr blogs. You can either let them down, or let them down. In any case, your show will possibly air, if it ever does air, in the worst time slot, on the worst network, in the worst time for television, in television history. Parks and Rec may be your lead-in. I tried to time it right, but... All right, let's get Aaron out here and play some D&D.
Aaron McGathy to the stage. Yeah. There she is.
Oi.
Yeah, you can't wait for the Variety headlines, huh? You love your famous boyfriend.
I do love my famous boyfriend.
You love those Michael Osiello headlines.
I mean, full disclosure, I'm still a little drunk from that neighborhood party.
With the tumor lady?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It was crazy.
It was well, I mean, it certainly was not crazy. But it was a party, and I drank a lot to get along with people.
I want to hang out with her more. Like, I find myself now, I think it's a 30 versus 40 thing. I think in the 10 years between 30 and 40, mortality becomes Breaking Bad. I just find myself
like you're waiting for it to come, and it's
I just like a finding. So like you see somebody whose foot has been chopped off by a boat propeller, and you're just like, tell me more about that, because you start like preparing yourself for. Whereas before that, from 29 to 30, you're just like, I don't want to, that's not good. I don't want to go down that rabbit hole. I think maybe it's because I'm 40. I'm just like, hey, you almost died. What do you have a T-shirt?
I don't want to argue with you, but I think that's a human thing. That makes sense. We were in two different conversations, but I think that's interesting. Yours, like,
what was yours about?
My conversation at the party was not as cool. I was making jokes about drinking red wine, and a woman asked me what I was doing, and I told her very honestly, like, I don't know, I paint my drink, and I do whatever, and I'm worried about myself. And she's like, I'm a casting director, and you've auditioned for me. And I was like, cool. great.
You never know what's going to happen on the patio next to Dan Harmon's house.
But it was a great party. It was the most fun I've ever had.
What did you drink?
What did I drink?
Yeah.
Something from Paseo Robles.
Paso Robles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a grape. It was something made from grapes, and it was red.
Vodka.
Wine.
Wine. Mm-hmm. It was wine. I poured it in a glass that looked, I mean, the top was wide, and then it went down to a thing.
Wine glass.
Thank you, wine glass. Yeah, and I had several of those.
Are you okay?
No, I don't think so.
Are you going to puke?
No, I don't think I'm going to puke.
Let's play D&D.
All right.
Last town on Harmon Town. Our heroes had just felled a bearded demon. During the fight, Mulrain slew Slab Squat Thrust. This threw the group into a tense moral dilemma regarding the value of life. Not really. Sharpie didn't really care, so the gang moved past it. After hacking a group of entangled lemures to death, they discovered Sharpie's father, Mango Butzalot, buried up to his neck at the bottom of a large pit. Mango Butzalot told the heroes of Darkstar's assault on the world, how he destroyed mountains and pillaged cities, and was enslaving people to power strange eldritch engines of doom. Mango asked Sharpie to head towards Darkstar's Black Keep, far to the north, to put a stop to his evil plans. To aid the party, Mango also set Yurch, a dubious move that seemed like somewhat of a half-hearted gesture given the circumstances. And with some last-minute advice, Mango sent the adventurers off to the north. Yurch suggested that the party stop in either Thornvale or Fornheim, the frozen city, in order to seek aid from their military, as the fortress was known for its outstanding defensive and offensive capabilities. So onward they marched to Fornheim, and then to the Black Keep to stop Darkstar's reign.
Spencer. All right, so we're on our way to Thornfield.
Thornheim.
Thornheim?
Thornheim.
I knew
Thornheim.
It was a Jewish name. All right, and we're going to encounter random encounters on the way. Not that I'm metagaming.
As the days and miles pass, the vegetation grows sparse, the sky colder and darker. Rolling hills turn into high mountains and winding passes wend through treacherous trails. As you trudge up the mountains, you round a bend and catch sight of it. A dazzling crystalline fortress of blue and white, sparkling in the cold winter sun. Fornheim, the frozen city. But lying between you and the city gate is a massive white bridge, entirely composed of ice. The slick white ice bridge looks treacherous, glistening and shimmering, stretching across a great white void of howling, screaming wind.
Quirk.
Yes?
I can't remember why we came here.
Because Mango told us to go to the Black Heap, and this is the way to get there, I think. And also, that's all I remember. But I have the armlet of winter, and we're going to cross an ice bridge. Maybe I can reinforce this by calling forth my power of winter to reinforce this rickety city bridge.
No, you'll be popular here for a change. That'll be great. But
whoa.
I'm sorry.
What the fuck?
Sorry.
No, that's weird. Because I was just, everything was cool until just now.
I just, sometimes it's...
Are you saying I'm not popular wherever we go?
No, I'm saying you are.
You said it pretty sarcastically.
Well, I... Sarcasm.
You're very popular.
Thank you, Mulrain. What the fuck is up with this dick?
Everywhere we go, you get the right armlet for something.
I get it. It's called armlet, first of all. You call it armlet like you got like a dum-dum.
Can we not fight and can we have a password?
I was totally cool and I was going to reinforce the ice bridge and we could all go in there like friends, but you were being like a weirdo.
Was the ice bridge broken?
No, he said it was rickety. I mean, I can see non-metagamically looking ahead of me that this ice bridge looks like it could use some reinforcing.
Spencer, do I have power of make the other people in my party kiss so we can let go of some tension?
There's diplomacy.
They did?
Yeah, they fucked in a tree.
Right. They fucked in a tree?
I think so, yeah.
What? It depends on your definition. That's it.
Wait, what? You guys fucked in a tree?
Look, if you're not going to show up for every episode, then...
On purpose?
You don't fuck accidentally up a tree.
Fine.
If you're fucking in a tree, you...
Well, knowing that, maybe you guys should just fuck now, and we can move on.
Metagaming.
That's not metagaming. Moraine is pro-fucking.
I walk up to the edge of the bridge and stick out one toe to test its stability.
This bridge is rather thick. It's maybe 5 or 6 feet thick, and it extends quite a ways.
I saunter past his checking.
300 feet. It seems sturdy as he saunters out.
I'm just walking.
See you at the other side, my good ex-friend.
I spit on my stomach, and I slide across. Oh, no, wait. I dry my stomach.
Yeah, that would make... That... Wait, halfway through sliding, you dry your stomach?
I'm realizing if I spit on my stomach, I'll be at the front of the thing.
Yeah, it'll make you stick.
My spit will... I blow my stomach, and then I slide across.
Oh, okay. You get, like, 5-7 feet.
How far across is the bridge?
It's like 300 feet.
I giggle like I was doing a joke, and I stand up.
I stay at my edge of the bridge, and I yell out to Sharpie. I say, hey, look, man, I don't know what that was about back there, but look, this bridge might not hold us all. Get to the other side, and then I'll come after you.
All right. I'm sorry, too, about what happened.
Yeah, I was out of the fucking left field, dude.
I've been drinking.
Really?
Yeah.
What have you been drinking?
Vodka. Oh, in the game?
What game are you talking about? Spencer, experience points.
That's not fair. He's not allowed to do that.
I'm allowed to stay in the game and immerse myself in my...
You guys didn't actually fuck in a tree, right? Like in real life.
I scan the horizon for trees. Are there trees?
There's no trees.
There's no trees?
It was kind of like my own private Idaho. There was just like,
no trees.
Like still shots of us doing different stuff.
With my armlet of winter, I called down a sleet and rain and a snowstorm to fashion an ice tree.
Okay.
Like I just like walking like crazy, like high stepping, like stomping with every foot.
No, that's definitely happening. Also the sleet, So it's already kind of snowy, but you're whipping it up into a frenzy and it's getting quite strong and treacherous. As if like maybe strong winds might blow you off a slippery bridge.
Okay, I stopped doing that.
Okay. Said winds calm.
I was
down.
Just testing out my ability to fashion ice trees.
That didn't go so well.
Okay, good.
I would go. It didn't even
look,
happen.
Look, forewarned is forearmed.
Yeah. Meanwhile,
it is what it is.
You're stepping onto this bridge.
Knowing is half the battle.
The bottom line at the end of the day.
Yes. Stop, drop, and roll.
You hear the sound of crunching ice and snow and. Coming out of the edges of this bridge are these large black poles. They're kind of extending from the ground up into the air, and they start buzzing in a strange, weird sound, and you see kind of lines and runes glow, light up on their surface. It makes a buzzing sound. It's kind of weird.
Along the sides of the bridge?
Yeah, so it's as if like maybe railing popped up, but not the railing, just the posts.
Gotcha.
But they're big, and they're about 10 feet tall and black.
And they're buzzing.
And they're ominous.
I don't like it.
You don't.
So I'm still not on the bridge. Mulrain's not on the bridge. Sharpie's out there on the bridge.
Okay. You're right at the beginning of it. You're about halfway, and you're 7 feet.
Sharpie has her navel stuck to the bridge 7 feet across.
Mulrain.
I mean, Mulrain does, right.
I mean, you're not stuck. You're just prone.
I'm just an asshole. I'm just lying there.
I like these. These are posts. These are like posts that are like buzzing and.
Yeah, they're like buzzing posts.
I keep moving forward trepidatiously.
All right, that
hesitantly, reticently.
You don't feel impeded.
Then I start bounding, like a juvenile puppy.
All right.
You, can I throw a rope around Sharpie and kind of use him like a sled dog?
While lying down?
Sorry?
While lying down?
Well, maybe I get up a little bit and then
okay.
I throw
just
up.
Enough to, you know.
Oh, yeah. Maureen, if you lie down, I'll get on you like a surfboard.
Oh, yay. Yeah, get on me like a surfboard. I have a cold. Yeah, get on me like a surfboard. Just, what do you mean, get on me like a surfboard?
You just tied your rope to him while you're laying on your stomach and you wanted to
slide
across.
Why not get on me like a sled?
Well, I'll stand facing forward as opposed to side like sideways like a surfboard. I thought I'd just.
Get on me any way you'd like.
I thought we had a pact where we were going to play together.
No, we do. I'm dealing with you guys fucking in a tree. Are you guys together?
That was like back on the shadow plane.
I don't even remember that. That was like
no,
shadow.
It's fine.
It was like
it's
shadows
fine,
of us fucking.
Fine.
That was pre-shadow plane.
That was
guys,
last
in this party,
week.
We all fuck whatever we want.
It happened last week.
It's totally fine.
But it was still like shadows of.
All right.
Our
it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
Curiosity.
It's all cool. This is a party.
Yeah, the rope, it doesn't go as far as you'd hope, and it doesn't land around its shoulders or reach him.
Okay.
Because
okay.
I'm bounding, like, I don't know if you've never seen Footloose, right? Like the side shot of Kevin Bacon, like the dolly shot where he's just bounding, like, through the steel mill.
Like, it's like a Bob Fosse skip he's doing.
Like, I every step is like another move. I'm just bounding.
You slip and fall.
Did you do a skip check?
I did.
Okay.
He failed it.
All right. Well, I get up and I continue doing it though, because I'm
your like, spirits can't be.
All right.
Damaged.
Well, I using my fast barbarian movement, I just run out and try to get as much ground across the bridge as possible.
All right. I try to grab his ankle like a surfboard.
All right. You grab his ankle, and are slid it onto the bridge. Being grabbed by your ankle, you find it a bit hard to move.
Yeah. No shit.
Yeah. Even so, you make your way onto the bridge in the midst of these buzzing pillars.
This episode is just called Crossing a Bridge.
Wrong. Crossing a bridge wrong.
You hear a far-off clang sound, and then you hear the sound of distant cannon fodder. I mean fire, not fodder.
Fodder.
That doesn't Cannons sound like shatter. Anything. That just sounds like people that are going to die.
How far across the bridge are we?
You're about halfway.
Okay, I keep running.
Yeah, you do.
I keep surfing.
All right. What do you keep doing?
I'm like I actually do like one roll, like
like a combat roll.
No, like a leap and a roll.
I call that a combat roll.
I just keep bounding.
Oh,
you? Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
As I'm traversing the bridge, I'm just saying like. Like my locomotion is fueled by a juvenile angst. Like I'm mad at my dad. I'm mad at having to read Catcher in the Rye. Like I don't know why I have to do anything except smoke and drink. I'm just going, and I'm just bounding.
That comes off in your bounds. Anyway, you see three large dark shapes hit the ground right in front of you. You're the farthest forward, so you're the closest. They're about 10 feet off.
Who is me?
No, Sharpie. He's
farthest bounding.
Along.
He's bounding.
Yeah, he's bounding. Smoking and drinking.
I'm holding you back.
I know. Yeah,
but those things, they hit the ground, and you hear cracks in the ice as ice cracks start happening. Like that, yeah. And rising up out of the three craters, you see three dark cloaked figures.
I'm the closest to them, right?
You're the closest to them.
I hold my hands up and say, "All hail, dark cloak figures! I am an emissary of peace from Myselfia."
Said figures are dark, ogre-sized skeletons.
They wear heavy black fur cloaks and charcoal-colored plate armor. Their eyes blaze with a cold blue fire.
All right, don't judge.
You can hear the grinding sound of metal gears turning. The grinding becomes a clattering and then a silence. The skeletons drop into combat poses as large frozen swords materialize in their hands, melding together from ice and snow.
Gentlemen, please. No need for that.
Can we get over there somehow? Maybe we do the same Sharpie lunge.
And I go, gentlemen, please. And then I wreathe my arms in shocking grasp electricity. And I go, no need for that.
All right, that happens. As you're speaking, two of them surround you. They're on either side of you, and the third opens its mouth, and from within you can hear kind of a tinny voice from deep inside go, Fornheim is the stronghold of the strong! And then the two guys flanking you lunge.
What?
They strike you quicker than lightning with their icy blades.
Gay. And by that I mean equal.
Dealing 15 damage.
Gay.
Meaning empowered.
Yeah, like fucking, like who's gonna contain these people?
I run up behind the recently wounded Sharpie, and I shoot, and I take out my armlet of winter and do a sleet and snow attack at them to try to blow them off the bridge.
Yeah, okay. So, activating your armlet, you whip up the winds and sleet in a frenzy.
Armlet. It's armlet.
Oh, sorry. I think armlet's clever.
It's cool.
You're welcome.
It's like a bracelet on your arm.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, I mean, that's what an armlet is, right?
Well, it's an amulet for your arm?
Yeah.
You wrote armlet on here.
I know. It is definitely an armlet.
You guys should do a podcast called Jewelry Talk.
It says armlet. A-R-M-L-E-T.
And with wintry powers wreathing your body and surrounding you, you charge headlong into one of the skeleton dudes. You miss, but your momentum carries you skidding on the ice, and you tackle and clumsily, you know, knock into him, and the two of you are kind of sprawled out on the floor in a heap.
Cute.
Yeah.
Can I attack again, or am I now open to an attack?
It's now Moraine's turn.
All right, I run up, and I... Where everyone is standing now is not on the bridge, right? It's on the other side.
They're like three-quarters of the way down the bridge. Right now, you're about a midway down it, so you're standing off a bit.
Okay. Well, I run up to where everyone is.
Okay.
I create flaming armor for a second.
Yeah.
I mean, how powerful is this flaming armor?
It wreaths you with flames that don't feel hot to you.
But do they feel hot to an ice bridge that we're all standing on?
I'm just wondering if I'm gonna destroy the bridge, yeah.
I mean, you don't know that. You just know they're not hot to you.
Maybe fire on an ice bridge.
Well, I mean, you know that you can deactivate it if it starts causing problems.
Okay, I'll take your word for it.
All right.
I mean, can I slide past them? Like risky business? Can I risky biz slide past?
That's what Tom Cruise did in that movie. He slid past enemies.
Called a fireplace.
He just slid.
He slid past his parents' rules. Okay, well...
Yeah, that happens. You slide past.
Oh, I slide past? Okay.
Yeah, on
well,
fire.
Well, if I've slid past, I create flaming armor.
Uh-huh.
That's on fire. Sorry.
On a bridge made of ice.
No, I slid past. And then
you're still on the bridge.
All right. Okay. Well, I give them both eye contact. This like look like if it starts to go bad.
I got no problem. I mean, it's a bridge made of ice. It's not like, you know.
I mean, what's below the bridge? Probably heaven, right?
I'm sure there's a lot of ice infrastructure.
White void.
Okay.
Melting point of ice.
Somebody asks, what's the melting point of ice?
This pancake theory. Of...
Okay, this is what I do. I put on the flaming armor, but I hop.
Okay.
I'm hopping. I'm constantly hopping.
Wait.
So the fire's not really making contact with the ice bridge too frequently. So I'm just hopping along and hopping and hopping. So it's really just, there's just a slickness. So it makes the bridge better.
So yeah.
So you're on fire and hopping.
I'm on fire and hopping.
And what else?
And I fire a flaming arrow.
Okay.
At the one in the front.
The one in the front. Loosing your flaming arrow, it hits critically so.
Oh!
Dealing. I can't do math. 16 damage.
Oh, shit.
Your hopping seems to be working. Putting it at Sharpie's turn.
Oh.
Sharpie's in the ice buckets.
Sorry.
Well, I've been thinking about this for a while, and... I think a guy died in the audience. Okay, I'm up close to all these guys, right?
Yeah.
I'm in their grill, as the urbans say.
Yeah.
All right. Shocking grasp, because I've just had a lot of success with that, and I've just had it up to here.
Having it up to here, you loose a shocking grasp.
You shall let me pass! Something like that.
Yeah, that's good.
Dealing 13 damage.
Nice.
Yeah. It's a less than shocking grasp.
Am I still tangled up with the guy that I was close to?
Yeah, you're in a heap.
Can I just... How high is the railing on this bridge?
There's no railing.
So it's just a flat bridge?
Yeah.
I just use my brute strength and try to just grapple him and throw him off the side.
All right, you grapple him and you have him firmly, but you can't throw him off. Right now you're just kind of wrestling with him.
Shit.
Yeah.
So I kiss him just to make it creepy.
Yeah.
Like right on the base of the ear, like the neck.
It's
like, whoa, creepy. Whoa, what the fuck?
it's creepy. All right, he is creeped out. No, Skeld, they're not affected by that. But he neither does he manage to wrestle you off of a bridge. So you guys are just kind of locked in a standstill.
Fair enough.
At the same time, two of those skeleton dudes that aren't being wrestled attack. One lunges towards Sharpie, having been shocked by Sharpie.
Yeah.
The other lunges at Mulrain.
I point out as he's attacking me that he has no muscle tissue. That he's made out of pure bone. No muscle tissue. He's animated bone, which is lame. He might as well be rock.
Okay.
Or a rainstorm. Like, it's not... I want him to know that I'm not concerned.
He strikes you, dealing 12 damage.
Are you concerned now?
Well, what... Okay, what did I... You're keeping track of my hit points, right?
Yeah.
Am I dead?
You have 8 left.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, so I'm like, is that all you got? That kind of thing.
The other one swings at Mulrain, but she nimbly dodges. Now it's Mulrain's turn.
Okay, I'm going to do... Okay, I put my hand near the face of the monster. Not on his face because I don't want to hurt him. I put my hand near the face of the monster and I make eye contact with his blue eyes and I say, I'm you. I've similarly met adversaries who I didn't understand, and I want to say that I understand you, and you can destroy me if you'd like, but I just want to understand and love you, and my friends are good, and we won't hurt you. Please let us across your bridge. Also, my friend Quirk will blow you. And he will blow you.
But I'm all teeth.
But meanwhile, like, you're in this hug standstill with one of his friends.
While that's happening, I'm still kissing a skeleton. We both lock eyes, and I'm waiting to hear, like, see what the response is.
I almost want to take it back, because I don't want it to be sexual. I just want it to be human. I don't say he can blow you, but I do my eyes, and I go, No, I don't do that. I just look at him. So?
Wait, what do you do then?
Well, I...
You can
I,
also I attack my, these fucking things that are getting us.
I use my diplomacy.
Uh-huh.
And I appeal to their humanity, their humanoidanity.
Their skeletality.
They have skeletons, right, guys?
Yeah.
Right.
No, we're all
skeletons
underneath.
When the flesh goes away.
Yeah. He strikes you with his frozen sword, dealing 8 damage.
All right. You know what? And I look at him and I say, I get it. That's fine. So maybe next time around he'll...
Yeah. Turn the other cheek, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes I think that these creatures are you.
You are?
I know they're probably not, but sometimes I think that you're thinking, fuck you, Aaron. No, 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 no.
That's why they're all skinny.
Wait, you want me to blow Spencer? Spencer, I'm all teeth.
Fun question.
Sharpie, get in the fight.
Yeah, it's Sharpie's turn.
No.
Kick it in the balls.
Not Scorching Ray, no.
Don't die.
Ray of Frost. Ray of Frost is a level 0 spell that does 1-3 damage that I was...
I like this has turned into The Price is Right. <It's> 49 cents.
Price around it. $3.49.
The kitty litter. The kitty litter.
I don't mind it. I do appreciate the input, but I do think I have had the best luck with...
And Dan, we are very close to the end of the show, so whatever you do, put a flourish on it.
It zooms into my eye, and then you see my dad hitting me with a belt again. And then it comes back out, and you just see... And this is my gimmick. It's just... Shocking grasp! And I grab one of the skeletons. I'm not reinventing the wheel.
Yeah, you do grab the skeletons. Dealing 16 damage. You hear a sizzling sound from deep within it, and then it catches fire and falls to the ground.
Yeah.
Damn!
Pretty good. Pretty good.
I say, fuck it, God, I can't riff one. Looks like you're...
Have Anatoly help you. Anatoly, direct the last line of this episode. Like, what would he say right now?
What would you say if you're killing a skeleton?
That's meat advice. You can use ice puns too.
Fuck.
I have one.
Fuck! Thank you for coming to Hermantown once again.
We love you all. One more time for Aaron McCarthy and Spencer Crittenden. And how about James Urbaniak and Gibran Anatoly? Thank you so much, Aaron. Good luck with your studies. And Alex Rubin is the writer from Community. I'm Jeff Davis, your comptroller. Dan Harmon, your mayor, everybody.
We won't be here for... I'll see you at Comic-Con, but we were not going to do a show on Sunday, so see you the Sunday after next, but I'll see you in San Diego, I assume, right?
And thank you, Feral Audio, and all of your brilliant content.
Yes, yes, thank you, Feral Audio, and all your brilliant content.
Good night.
If I could have your attention, please. For everyone's safety, we are now entering full lockdown mode. You should at this point be gathered in the dining hall. That is our main assembly point and safe room. If any of you are still in the quadrangle or any of the offices or labs, please find alternate containment. Lock yourself in somewhere if you can and await further assistance. To those of you already assembled in the dining hall, I need you all to be sitting on the floor, below window level. Remain low and quiet. All the doors and windows should be automatically sealed at this point. An enforcement team is on their way to contain the threat. At this time, the best thing you can do is remain calm. Do not react vocally if you hear shots fired. Do not attempt to move the wounded. If you find yourself in possession of a weapon, discard it immediately. You do not want to cause any confusion for the enforcement team when they arrive. Remember the acronym ELBO. Evacuate, lockdown, blockade, obey, and wait. As always, there is no smoking in the dining hall. Shit. I forgot to mention the closure of the concourse tube. I know I forgot something. I can't go back on bike now. I look like I don't know what I'm doing. We can't afford to compromise any confidence people have in me at this point. Most people don't even know who the fuck I am. Kid had to take out a fucking reconnaissance pod full of officers. Officers shouldn't be allowed to all ride in the same pod at once. I've always said that. But that mostly worked, right, Karen? I hit all the technical stuff.
When the Kronos was remodeled two cycles ago, the term quadrangle was replaced with access square.
Okay, well, no one cares about that. I got everything else correct?
All relevant aspects of the ship's lockdown procedure were communicated.
Should I have made an emotional appeal, we'll fight them on the beaches kind of thing? I mean, I'm supposed to be a leader here.
In situations such as this, a tone of technical clarity is usually best.
Well, you would say that. You're a computer.
I was upgraded with an empathy chip as per the...
I know, your empathy chip. Can you try to get hold of enforcement sector again?
The frequency is still blocked.
Okay, fuck it. This is Captain James Urbaniak again. I just want to say that I have total confidence that the situation will soon be eradicated. This ship survived the Multon 3 contamination... When a meteoroid punched a hole through our main thruster, we all pitched in. And last cycle, when the Azaleans seized Sector 9, the members of the Kronos were among those thanked by the OSR Alliance in their victory statement. We have been through this before, and we'll get through it again. That's what we do. Oh, and by the way, the concourse tube has been closed. I will provide you with further updates as I receive them. Most people who do this kind of attack, they usually kill themselves at some point, right? Can you get a location off his internal transponder?
Internal transponder 742 has been disabled.
Of course it has. It's always the tech guys who go nuts, isn't it? Christ. Karen, how many people are in the dining hall?
731.
Okay. Well, there's nothing else I can do, right? Well, just sit tight. Like I said. Can you double-check the seal on the door?
The dining hall door is sealed.
No, no. My door. Main cabin.
The main cabin door is sealed.
Thank you, Karen.
James.
Yes, Karen.
I would advise against listening to music at this time.
Thank you for your opinion. It helps me concentrate. Any word from enforcement?
The frequency is still blocked.
Of course it is. Well, be careful what you wish for. Not that I ever wished to be a captain. Do you know how many people had to die for me to get to this position? Six. Six people. This was never meant to happen. Some are born great, some achieve greatness, and some have greatness thrust upon them. That's Shakespeare, Karen.
I know, James.
Of course you know. Can you appreciate it? Can you appreciate this music, Karen? Schubert, Sonata Number 20, D959 in A major. Movement 2. Andantino.
I can recognize its calming effects.
Have we reached a singularity, Karen? I wanted to be a musician. Karen, calculate the shortest route from main cabin to emergency escape pod 1.
Calculating. Exit main cabin. Turn left down corridor A. Proceed 6.2 meters. Lower into officer's hatch located on floor. Enter emergency pod bay.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Are you planning on leaving, James?
What? No, no. I just wanted to know. In case we have to evacuate people.
There are 10 emergency escape pods. Each pod has a 10-passenger capacity limit. There are currently 730 persons in the dining hall.
Awesome. What time does the southbound to Long Branch leave Penn Station?
Insufficient data. Does not compute.
Very funny.
My vital scan has returned an increase in your pulse rate, James.
Wait, 730 persons? I thought before you said 731.
There are currently 730 persons in the dining hall.
And no one can get out or in, right?
That's correct.
Holy shit. This is not good, Karen. Not good. Have we heard from enforcement?
Still blocked.
Karen, do you remember Klavdia?
Klavdia Rabinovich, Expeditions Unit, Biosciences Sector, age 38.
Yes. I met her on the observation deck at the Inorganic Morphons Conference last cycle. We were both ducking out. I was supposed to give a talk that night, and I ended up, well, not giving a talk. We found an unoccupied conference room and kept the lights off. No one found us. A week and a half later, the Azalean conflict breaks out, and the next thing I hear, she's up in a medic unit on Sector 9. Extensive injuries. She's lost a foot, got an infection, and she images me to come see her. And I come see her. I go up there. I bring her real cherry blossoms from the farm deck. I mean, they fall apart in a second in that atmosphere, but it's the thought. I walk into her room. She's in pretty bad shape. But she gives me a big smile. And she has friends there. Family. Her mom is there. We've met less than 2 weeks ago, and I'm meeting her mom. I'm being introduced to everybody. Everything was suddenly really accelerated. And after that, I didn't come back anymore. I made excuses. Then I stopped returning her images. I called the medic center anonymously a couple times to check her status. Eventually, they told me she got discharged. And that was that. I got scared, Karen. I couldn't commit.
If you are implying that you are incapable of taking charge of this command post, I was built by Halstead Corporation under specification of the Artificial Intelligence Designation Ordinance, and am programmed to take over any and all responsibilities of said post as defined by the revised charter of the Council of 2063. In other words, in the event of the person in command being incapacitated, I am able and authorized to take over this ship. You have been placed in command through a council of your peers. Your vital scans are normal. Your brain scans are normal. You have sustained no injuries. Is this information correct?
Yes, it is.
You are not incapacitated, are you, James?
No, I'm not. Thank you, Karen.
No problem. Internal transponder 742 is back online.
Jesus Christ, where is he?
At the intersection of corridor B and dining hall. He appears to be stationary. His vitals are normal.
Okay.
How do you want to proceed?
Evacuate, lock down, blockade, obey, and wait.
Those are civilian commands, Captain.
Right. I know that.
There is a level 100 incapacitator located in the top right console of the cabin desk.
I know that. I fucking know that. Please calculate the shortest route from main cabin to the intersection of corridor B and dining hall.
Calculating.
And Karen?
Yes.
Beethoven, Symphony 7, Movement 2, Allegretto.
Accessing. Exit main cabin. Turn right down corridor A. Proceed 20 meters. Enter service module. Proceed to corridor B. Proceed 15 meters to dining hall.
I need a temporary override on the electronic reference device. Access to the tactical airlock. An open line to Orbitcom. Okay. Karen, please unseal main cabin door.
Getting On with James Urbaniak, Episode 11, Lockdown, was written by Bree Williams and James Urbaniak, and produced and performed by James Urbaniak. The voice of Karen was Bree Williams. This program is part of the Feral Audio Network. Visit feralaudio.com for prior episodes and other podcasts.